yo, 95 South, chilling at Freak Nick 93, Atlanta, Georgia. Yo, we come out here to find out where it's at.
Where that booty at?
What's happening? I'm writer, researcher, and professor Dr. Regina Bradley.
I'm music journalist Christina Lee.
From WABE and PRX, this is
Bottom of the Map, taking hip-hop conversation in a new direction.
Something that I battle with as a scholar who looks at popular culture is that there's just some aspect of popular culture you just can't scholarize. And I mean, like, I feel like Freaknik is one of them. I feel like it's important to talk about it, particularly the impact that it had on the city of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, like, I don't want to take away from the mystery and intrigue that was Freaknik, because I never went to Freaknik, but I have friends who went to Freaknik, so that when I asked them what you was doing at Freaknik, they kind of just give me this look like, mind your business.
This is the point where we should actually explain what Freaknik is, because it is a distinctly Southern phenomenon. Right?
Very much so. It was like the Black Spring Break before Spring Break happened. And because Atlanta is known for a lot of things, but in particular, Atlanta is also known for the AUC, the Atlanta University Center. So, you know, Clark Atlanta, Spelman, Morehouse. And I'm also going to shout out Morris Brown, because at the time, Morris Brown was popping. So that was like, you know, they were like, yo, what are we going to do for Spring Break? That significance of the culture of HBCUs is very much a part of that legacy that's associated with Freaknik. And it also was just a way, like folks will tell you, that it was a way for people to let loose and chill out and really kind of just have a good time in ways that going to the club on Thursday nights couldn't get you, because you got introduced to new people from new clubs.
Right.
So it was like, yeah, I might have known you in Atlanta, but this shawty right here is from Detroit. That person over there is from D.C. And just really kind of bringing together like this opportunity to freak a little something, however you want to play with that, and also have a party and have a good time.
Freaknik crowds had the kitchen jumping this morning at the IHOP on North Avenue. This table drove all the way from Indiana.
I come back here a year just to meet, you know, new friends, males and females, check out the new rides.
Freaknik definitely got its start in the AUC as just like a spring break celebration. It became such a phenomenon, I should say, that like first it was like college students from across the nation. They decided that for their own spring break, they decided they were going to come down to Atlanta.
Right.
And of course, you know, at its peak, it's bringing somewhere between 200,000 to 400,000 folks into the city of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. And the city of Atlanta infrastructure is like, what the hell? I mean, if you think that traffic on 285 and 20 is bad now, Shawty, I'll be like, I think there's still people from the 90s still in traffic because of Freaknik.
Yeah, you know, just like pulled over to the shoulder, you know.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I think that that's really important. But ultimately, though, Chris, what I think is also important in contextualizing Freaknik is that there was a lot going on in Atlanta at that time.
Oh, my God.
I mean, like, you know, on the one hand, you're dealing with, like, you're dealing with a lot. On the one hand, you're dealing with that like immediate aftermath of like the child murders.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this really traumatic experience that has basically gripped the city with terror, particularly the Black folks, working class Black folks in the city with terror. We're still dealing with that. You're also dealing with the beginnings of trying to bid for the Olympic Games, like, you know, trying to bring in this Olympic sized event. You have all of these like transitional things that are happening in the city. And then on top of that, you got this big ass street party that's literally Atlanta from the window to the wall.
I mean, this is like Freaknik is not only a testament to the city's burgeoning HBCU culture, thriving HBCU culture, but it's also a testament to a burgeoning hip hop scene. There was a lot of foundational work that was kind of like being done here, right? I'm sure you heard a lot of Miami, and that was because Southern hip hop was birthed in Miami. It was, you know, Uncle Luke being like the godfather, literally setting the tempo and the tone for what became Southern hip hop.
Ain't nothing but so good, street that
like at this particular juncture, we also had Atlanta starting to kind of like come to the forefront. Mm-hmm. And it's through the launching pad that is better known as like, oh, I don't know, like a Magic City. Basically like these famed strip clubs where you have DJs like the one coming out of Tag Team bumping his own record and making a hit out of Whoomp, There It Is.
Party people! Check it to wreck it, let's begin. Party on, party people, let me hear some noise. DC's in the house, jump, jump, rejoices. There's a party over here, a party over there. Wave your hands in the air, shake the dairy, yeah. These three words mean you're getting busy. Whoop, there it is, hit me.
Atlanta is sort of establishing itself as its own hip-hop capital right around the same time that Freaknik is coming to town, mm-hmm. which means that all these hip-hop artists are basically looking at all these college kids coming in town and being like, oh, this could be the chance to like break our artists and stuff. And it's for that particular reason that you were having like Outkast label reps actually passing out promo CDs from like car to car, because they were like, well, shit, you know, this is, you know, this is could be our potential audience.
And it's also another way that the hip hop scene in the South distinguishes itself from the bi-coastal rap part of it, right? Ooh. It's like you had, you know, when you think about how music was consumed in the South, the mobility of the music is through the car. I think that's so important, is that the way that the music was spread and how it was tested was reflected in the way the listening folk, how folks listen to hip hop in the South.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
It was like, yeah, I'm definitely with you. So like in the same way that folks were in, you know, the strip club and was like, well, this shit work out, yay or nay, you probably had somebody else in the parking lot putting out the same shit to the folks that were walking in that was like, okay, you're going to hear this in the club, but we also want you to listen to this in the car and see how that rides.
And I mean, I'm sure like all these Southern hip hop artists are kind of like looking at the landscape and it's like, okay, I could save myself like a trip to New York, right? Because it's like you had artists coming from not just Miami, but also like Memphis, not to mention like Atlanta artists and of themselves, like Akilo Ali, being able to test, you know, their music out to like basically, you know, their hometown.
Do what I wanna I'm do. Your freaky dancer.
First, they get to concern themselves with like winning over younger listeners in the region, as opposed to being like, okay, maybe we gotta see if we could break nationally first.
And it's also the way that, I mean, like hip hop moves. Like, you know, you talk about the South, you think about this idea of the Great Migration. The Great Migration historically was when Black folks left wherever they were in the rural South, basically, and moved either up north or to other more urban aspects of the South. It's probably safe to say that the urbanization in the South is what maybe made folks want to come back, besides like, you know, the weather and sundress season and everything like that. But I mean, like, on the one hand, you have folks who are like, oh, I'm coming back South for the summer. So it wasn't like folks weren't familiar with it, because I mean, like, if you still had connections in the South, you know, you go come down South for like a week or so, or sure, the summer to come see your cousins and everything, mm-hmm. like that. But like, you know, I'm thinking about that and the way that the music left and came back is like a predecessor or even a foreshadow of the way that the actual bodies themselves were coming back.
Ooh.
Were coming back South, right? So it's like this idea of the remigration probably picked up with Freaknik. It probably has a contribution to that, is because,
sure,
one, it shows Atlanta is an actual quote-unquote urban city, because there's still this widespread belief that cities don't exist below the Mason-Dixon line, and Atlanta is like, oh no, if we can have, you know, these type of events, mm-hmm. not necessarily saying it's like a positive thing, but you know, we still have these aspects of city life that,
right,
are easily digested by the folks who are coming back,
mm-hmm.
but before the actual bodies came back, the music went back with them to kind of remind them that the South was still, you know, viable. I don't want to sit here and like romanticize Freaknik. Like,
no.
I don't want to sit here and make it seem like it was just this great party where all these college folks came in, because what had happened was, is that, you know, you also had some of your hood Negroes who weren't in college, who weren't necessarily just trying to, you know, it was robbing season. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, who are also coming out, who are also adding to that concern that folks were showing about safety, particularly safety of young women.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't want to sit here and be like, oh, it was just so romanticized. But also, like, when Freaknik became, like, open to the public.
Yeah.
However you want to take that, mm-hmm. there was the introduction of the possibility of criminalizing it mm-hmm. in such a way that it, like, people literally had town hall meetings.
Right.
That were like, how the hell do we stop this thing from happening, you know, every year? I mean, like, there's folks who talk about it. So, like, historian Maurice Hobson talks about, not necessarily talk about Freaknik, but he talks about, like, this, the rise of infrastructure in the legend of the Black Mecca. You also have historian Ansley Quiros who talks about, you know, the actual history of Freaknik. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, like, I think that Freaknik is one of those ghosts that you're never going to get the full story because, right. one, people who actually went to Freaknik are not going to tell you what they was doing. Because that might, you know, that might interfere with what they got going on.
Whatever reputation, today. Whatever your LinkedIn description says, right.
So. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, mm-hmm. it's kind of like how I joke with my own students. I'm like, you know, some of the shit that I was doing when I was your age, you'll never know about because there was no social media, thank God.
Absolutely.
Because they would be like, no, you're not going to be no college professor. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, like, I think it's like that. I mean, like, you have folks who are now in these notable, prestigious positions, CEOs, mm-hmm. business folks, teachers, whatever. And they were doing stuff at Freaknik. They're like, yeah, we're going to keep that mm-hmm. we did it at Freaknik. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, you were talking about, like, the oral history.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like, you know, there's still some folks who will give you the side eye. They'd be like, well, why? Like I was saying earlier, like, I knew I actually have friends who actually went to Freaknik. They'd be looking at me like, mind your business.
Just right.
Mind your business.
And then meanwhile, what's the interesting thing about Freaknik is that even though it was so readily documented through like personal camcorders and things like that, the mm-hmm. legend of Freaknik has really only been able to, you know, build out via oral tradition. It was like you heard some stories or you had to be there to the point where when you get to T-Pain teaming up with Adult Swim to do a Freaknik musical.
Yeah, that shit.
What's happening, motherfucker? You know who I is. It's Freak Nizzle. Come to turn the party up to 10. I know you heard of me. Freaks get word of me and get wetter than blueberry vodka. Most certainly. What's up, motherfucker? You don't like me? I heard you throwing a party and did not invite me. Plus, I heard this shit wasn't exciting. Just a bunch of bitches pulling hair fighting. I see so much potential. Even though this area is a residential. Turn up the radio. Put on the instrumental. Party 101. Pick up a motherfucking pencil. I'm back, bitch. Like that, bitch. You ain't gotta.
And when we were talking about the ghost of Freaknik, mind you, at least in T-Pain's world,
well, let me throw this motherfucking money in the air. Turn it up.
We are talking about a literal ghost, like a black ghost that has like dollar signs, you know, printed on him, wearing a chain with a likeness of himself. Basically winning over even the likes of President Barack Obama to be like, yes, you are to take over this world as the levels of booty shake and rise ebb and flow within the city of Atlanta.
I mean, and the ghost was best friends with Trap Jesus, a literal Trap Jesus, mm-hmm. who was voiced by Lil Wayne.
Right.
Trap Jesus, who was drinking lean, like, mm-hmm. his, you know, like he touched the cup and like the lean refilled.
Right. If you're And all I'm saying is that if your influence reaches Trap Jesus, in addition to an Obama, it's like, who are you to even argue? I mean, that's the whole point of this Adult Swim thing. It's like, how can you even argue with that?
The jankiness of it. I mean, like, I mean, the musical reflects the jankiness of not only the idea of what Freaknik actually did, but also in the minds of folks who weren't attuned to that part of culture. Right. They're like, oh, this is just some old janky shit. And so how are we going to make it seem janky? I mean, that's what was brilliant about T-Pain's musical was uh-huh. that he was very much aware of the criticism that surrounded the Freaknik and just, like, satirized it. Like,
right.
Wonderfully satirized it in a really useful and also so comedic way.
This goes out to all the wannabe strippers in the world. In the world. In the world. Yeah. Da, 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 da.
I I remember watching like an episode of Sister Sister when they traveled.
What?
Yeah, on Sister Sister, they were traveling to Atlanta to come to Freaknik.
No.
I mean, like in hip hop, you have, you know, folks talking about Freaknik. It immediately comes to mind as Lil' Kim.
I'm not the one you sleep with to eat quick. Want a cheap chick? Better go down to Freaknik. You got to hit me off.
You have artists who are not Southern who are looking at this particular gathering of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And making assumptions about, not in particular, making assumptions about the women that attend Freaknik, right? Being like loose and free, and then you're thinking about this idea of booty shake and booty shake music and all of that. Like, you can't be a complicated, you know, I can shake my ass, but I also got a 4.0 at Stanford, so whatever.
Right.
But it's just really interesting how folks try to, like, dilute and wash out the complexities of, you know, what was associated with that event, to the point where it still comes up like at least once a decade.
Much more frequently than that.
I mean,
for sure.
All right, because I didn't go to the original Freaknik, but I remember being in college and they tried to bring back Freaknik in like 04, 05 or something like that. And folks were like, we ain't going down there. We ain't doing that. And then in 2010, then Mayor Kasim Reed banned anything that was Freaknik related. He's like, we're not going to do this shit no more.
We always had some events to go to. We had some shows to go to, some parties to go to. They canceled everything. We had nothing to do. They were pissed. Not that there was a reason to go out and loot and violence, but they were pissed. They had nothing to do.
If you know 100,000 plus people are coming to your city and the city government blocks any type of controlled gathering for those things, you're forcing people into the streets. And when you do that, you're forcing frustration.
Friday night, police in riot gear were called in to stop looters from breaking into stores. The mayor blamed it on local thugs.
And then now, in 2019, you know, in June, we're looking at a family-friendly Freaknik. Can we talk about this?
Okay. Like, I feel like they didn't know what they were getting themselves into, because the first interview that they did about this new Freaknik that is coming to Solaris Amphitheater in Lakewood this summer, June 22nd. When they were initially talking about it, they had their publicist from Los Angeles kind of speak on behalf of this festival, right? And that was their first mistake.
Well, she said that, you know, she heard about Freaknik through her husband,
who
is
wasn't
from Atlanta,
right?
Who actually attended.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, in my mind, I'm like, okay, for me, that's like a strike one.
Yeah.
It defies the purpose of what Freaknik was as a street party.
Mm-hmm.
And you're you know, you're keeping it contained within this particular space, this little small space. And you got some folks who were supposed, I mean, who you thought might have, you know, performed. So, like, I think Luke is coming up for that.
Mm-hmm.
Project Pat is performing.
Chicken heads. Chicken heads. Chicken, chicken. Chicken heads.
So
you have Bun B, who, you know, did
Bun
a music.
Bun B probably didn't perform. He was probably at the strip club passing out the CDs.
As part of UGK, he did film a music video at Freaknik.
Yeah, baby.
See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. See, OG, though. He's the OG. But yeah, I mean, like, even the title itself, how does that sound like? Okay, grab the kids, grab your wife, we going to Freaknik.
I keep yelling it, but y'all don't hear me though. On the cool, I'm trying to tell it, be the place where I've been laying low. Limping in my hometown, niggas ain't tripping, so I just to keep my throne down and
So that kind of all speaks to the complicated legacy of Freaknik, right? Because this latest iteration of Freaknik comes after, I think, like as you said, people tried to bring it back so many times. And not only that, but the city tried to, I guess, contain it in certain ways, like kind of be like a little bit more involved, like tried to like hold it at very specific venues, mm-hmm. basically trying to like make sure that it's something that was within their control.
They're trying to make it like how, you know, other music festivals that take place in Atlanta play out.
Exactly.
And Freaknik, Freaknik the original?
Sure.
Was not a music festival.
No.
There was music.
It evolved.
It was festive. But it's not, it wasn't a festival in the ways that, you know, because it wasn't set up like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that to try to reorganize not only the way that it was presented, but also like the purpose.
Right,
right. is just, you know, off.
This Freaknik posits itself as more inclusive, I think is like their current terminology, right? I think WABE even did an interview with, you know, the current producer of this event. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, this is somebody who did go to Freaknik, to his credit, but he was like, we basically want to bring Freaknik back in like a positive light. Like he's saying that he's going to have health screenings there. He's potentially going to donate some of the proceeds to local women's empowerment groups. But if you go on the actual Freaknik website, and I know you're already side-eyeing me, I'm ready for another one. If you go to the official Freaknik website, their logo is two peaches forming a booty.
Oh, that's real family friendly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, what is it exactly that you want to be, right?
So apparently like the family friendly is the peach fuzz on the peach booty. No? I'm sorry.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, okay, you want to shed Freaknik in like a new light, and that's, I, you know, that's one thing. But you're also trying to cash in on this very particular nostalgia that people have for the event, mm-hmm. as controversial as it was. You're trying to, you're with that particular imagery, it's like you're still playing into what made it alluring, what had people like hopping in their cars and deciding like, you know what, I'm gonna check this out no matter how inappropriate it may be.
I mean, but can we also just point out the fact that the folks who were going to Freaknik 20 years ago are now in their 40s, possibly their 50s, and are like, we ain't trying to be out in the street like that. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I think it's a reflection of the audience that they're trying to get. I don't necessarily think they're trying to get young folks to try to go
mm-hmm.
to Freaknik 2.0.
Sure.
I think that they're pulling from a different market. But I also think because of that market, they have taken into consideration that folks have grown.
Hip-hop is old enough to have greatest hits tours. This is something akin to that. A greatest hits festival, a greatest hits concert.
And also you have a greatest hits of a street festival that doesn't seem to want to die.
Freaknik in 2019. Mm-hmm. I guess the ultimate question is like, why couldn't this festival just take on another name? Why couldn't it rebrand itself as something else?
Right. So, I mean, I guess the quick answer would be the senses of nostalgia that people are trying to capitalize off of. And Freaknik makes me also think about Woodstock, right? Like, you know, Woodstock was in a different time period, but ultimately it exploded into this like festival of people. You know, when Freaknik started, it was a literal like get together. It was like a little party get together. And then it ultimately exploded into what it became known as. And the nostalgia there handles differently. One, because it was in a city that was messing up infrastructure type stuff.
Right.
And not like in upstate New York. But the other aspect of that is, you know, they even tried to bring back a Woodstock, and they were like, oh, we're gonna make it in this type of way. They tried to, you know, make money off of it. And folks were like, nope, 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 it's not gonna happen. The time period is different.
Uh-huh.
The sense of purpose, I think, too. I mean, like, Woodstock was clashing against like anti-war sentiments, and folks were just trying to like feel good. It was like the hippie age. In a sense, it was this music festival, but ultimately the purpose became a lot deeper than that. It was like this like collection of community for people to like get away from a lot of that anxiety that was taking place. And in Freaknik, that anxiety was thrown in people's face.
Come on, let's go, move, we're going to jail. Let's go, come on.
On the one hand, you have them trying, you know, you have officials trying to represent the city of Atlanta as this international and accessible city for not just black folks, right, but for a little bit of everybody. So to make it you know, to be able to not be able to control the elements of what Freaknik was, whether it was the infrastructure, whether it was police presence, whether it was you know, ultimately how white citizens were starting to feel. You're starting to get this transition of Atlanta being recognized as this black city into this larger city where you have a lot more different folks of backgrounds, and particularly in class. I'm thinking more so that class influenced how Freaknik was looked at, and also how they tried to control it in ways that it's not just easily like represented by race. So, I mean, for me, that's what I think it is. It's like the idea of nostalgia, they tried to capitalize on it. They couldn't, but they're still trying to, because somewhere there's somebody who's like, oh, you remember what happened at Freaknik? Ha ha ha. Maybe we can make some money off of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the biggest takeaway for me personally, I mean, aside from this idea of it being some sort of event, is definitely like the music. I feel like the music in of itself, from how Freaknik went on to have its own soundtrack to the point where it became like a reference point lyrically in music to come, I think that's obviously like a really interesting thing to study, because you're starting, like, it's through the music that you see Freaknik as it was happening, to where we have Beyonce talking about how she's riding top down like Freaknik.
I'm the only lady here, still the realest nigga in the room. I break the internet top two and I ain't number two. My body, my ice, my cash, all real, I'm a triple threat. Fuck it up and then leave, come back, fuck it up and leave again. Top of the coupe and it look like Freaknik. In the hood hollering, free me. Too deep.
I think that's a really fascinating evolution, and that's certainly like a part of Southern hip-hop history, not to mention Southern history, that I wouldn't necessarily want to bury. So I don't think, you know, when a Kasim Reed says that we should just, like, forget that Freaknik ever happened, I don't think that's the right way to go, because I feel like we should just accept that that happened. That is a part of who we are. That's a part of this culture. That's a part of this, you know, this region's history.
It's like a generational thing. I mean, like, that's one of the reasons that folks really kind of treasure that memory, that nostalgia that you were talking about, is because there's really no real evidence that can be released on social media in the way that now everything is documented. You know what I'm saying? Everybody puts everything on online. Freaknik also represents the quote-unquote golden era of Southern hip-hop, and when folks were really at their peak, and to have these folks come back, and they still are awesome. Like, I've seen pretty much the whole lineup in different events, and they still turn up, and it's really dope. But I think to really pull on that idea of the historical significance of these artists, they were there when Southern hip-hop was really breaking onto the scene. They were there when folks were really, like, sitting up and paying attention to what the South got to say, right? Three Stacks, you know what I'm saying? So it's really important that the historical significance of these acts doesn't get lost in translation, because it's a ticketed event. And I think that ultimately they should pull on that and not necessarily trying to pull on the nostalgia that was Freaknik 1.0.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nostalgia doesn't allow for memories to settle. And I think that this is one of the memories that needs to settle so that we can go moving forward. I mean, like, ultimately, I think when you have a One Music Fest and an Afropunk, you still have elements of Freaknik in those things.
Of
it's
course.
Not necessarily directly connected to that. But ultimately, we don't have to keep pushing up the past to move forward, because it's not going to be able to settle, and we're not going to be able to, you know, really enjoy what we have right now. So, you know, acknowledging the significance of the event without trying to keep conjuring it up is what I think we should take away.
Just like with real ghosts. Let that ghost rest.
I'm going to go sat down somewhere.
Thank you for listening to Bottom of the Map, brought to you by WABE and PRX. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. It'll help more people find this show. Follow Bottom of the Map on your social media platforms at BOTMPod. Again, that's BOTMPod. Bottom of the Map is hosted by Christina Lee and Dr. Regina Bradley. Produced by Floyd Hall, that's me. Edited by Stephen Key. Our executive producers are Jaanne Berry and Christine Dempsey. Ayanna Taylor is our project manager. Our theme music is produced by Smith and Cash. Special thanks to Mike Johns and Lois O.G. Reitzes. This program is made possible, in part, by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. Follow, subscribe, connect. Holla.
I love you, Roy.